It's tuned to yesterday broadcasting programs from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Comedy coming up in this hour. Later on, it's the Milton Berle Show from 1948 with a salute to New York. But first, Joan Davis time with announcer Harry Von Zell as part of the cast in a CBS broadcast from March 11th, 1946.
Joan ain't got nobody.
Featuring the romantic singing of Anthony Russell.
Amor, amor, amor.
With a great comedy cast including Verna Felton, Shirley Mitchell, the music of Paul Weston and his orchestra, and yours sincerely, Harry Von Zell. And here's the star of our show, America's Queen of Comedy, Joan Davis.
Oh, Joan, stop stuffing that cake of swan into the piccolo now. Instead of blowing notes, you'll be blowing bubbles. Now, come over here, will you? I want to talk to you.
What do you want, Harry?
Well, Joni, I wanted to ask you. Are you listening to me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Well, now, you pay attention. I wanted to ask you if you were at the Academy Award Affair Thursday night.
The Academy Award Affair? Oh, yes, I was there, Harry, and it was very thrilling. You know, the audience stood up and cheered when Ray Milland got his Oscar for The Lost Weekend.
Oh.
And then I stepped up to get my award.
Your award? Who gave you an award?
The Bartenders of America.
The Bartenders of America?
Yeah, when people saw Lost Weekend, it stopped them from drinking. But when they saw my last picture, it drove them to drink.
Oh.
Swanville, USA, March 11th, this week. This week, with the March 15th deadline only a few days off, the citizens of Swanville, like citizens all over the nation, are busy preparing their income tax returns. Businessmen, workers, farmers, people in all walks of life are occupied with filling out their forms. But nowhere in Swanville will you find a form that needs filling out more than in...
Joni's Tea Room. Joan Davis speaking. Oh, hello, Mrs. McKay. Now, I don't feel so good today. I haven't been able to sleep lately. I've tried everything, too. I even bought one of those newfangled electric blankets. It was made by the same company that makes those automatic electric toasters. But something must have gone wrong at the factory. Why? Well, last night I slid in between the covers, turned on the switch, and just as I got nice and warm all over, a bell rang and I was popped out of bed. Yeah. And that's not all. When I put the bread in the toaster, it curled up and went to sleep.
Say, Joan... Joni,
yeah?
Is it true that you really haven't been able to sleep?
Not a wink in the last four nights, Harry.
Gee, that's terrible, Miss Davis. It's really agony lying awake all night.
It sure is, Andy. And as you lie there, you can hear every little sound. Right next to you on the night table, a clock is going. And in the apartment next door, somebody decides to take a bath. And the man who lives in the apartment directly above is getting ready to go to bed. He takes off his shoes. His brother must be staying over with him. Then across the street, a baby starts. And just as you're ready to fall asleep from exhaustion, the milkman starts delivering milk. He must have brought butter today. And that's the way it is all night long. Noise, noise, noise. It's driving me crazy.
I know it's awful, Joan. Listen, why don't we close the tea room a little earlier tonight so you can go home and get some sleep?
Yeah, that's a good idea, Harry. And before we close up, I think I'll drink a glass of hot milk.
Milk?
Yeah, milk. M-O-O. Milk.
Well, I'll go in the kitchen and warm some up for you, Miss Davis.
Oh, thanks, Andy. Gee, he's so thoughtful.
Yoo-hoo, Miss Davis. Yoo-hoo.
Oh, it's Rosella Hipperton.
Hello, Miss Davis. And Mr. Von Zell. Hello.
Oh, hello, Rosella.
Well, hi, you hippie. I'm sorry I can't talk to you now because we're closing up early tonight.
Well, really, Miss Davis, what causes you to suspect that I'm interested in your uninspired conversation? Frankly, your inane remarks stick in my craw.
Your what?
I said crawl, crawl, crawl.
Now, there's an old crow if I ever saw one.
Joan, stop
it.
Shame on Rosella, you'll have to forgive Joni. She's not feeling well at all. She hasn't been able to even get one good night's sleep for a week.
Oh, how unfortunate. I know what that means. I suffered from insomnia, too, until my doctor gave me a prescription for sleeping pills. Would you like to try one, Miss Davis?
Oh, no thanks, Ippy. I don't want any sleeping pills.
Listen, Joan, you know, I once knew a girl who suffered from insomnia until one night a neighbor of hers who had just been married suggested a remedy. She gave her a piece of cake to put under her pillow, and that did it.
A wedding cake?
No, a cake of swan.
A cake of swan?
Yeah, that's right, Rosella.
Oh.
She floated right into dreamland because she could rest comfortably in the knowledge that swan would solve all her soap problems, you know. Because Swan is the new white floating soap that's really four swell soaps in one. It's not only great for your bath, but Swan's mild that makes it great for baby's bath, too. And, of course, Swan's perfect for dishes and light laundry. Yes, sir, from the moment that girl found Swan, she always slept soundly, deep in the arms of Morpheus.
Mr. Von Zell, don't you mean Morpheus?
No, Morpheus. Just you try Swan and see if you don't get Morpheus money. Oh! There's no trick to it, Rosella. Just a quick twist of the wrist breaks Swan in two, and presto, you have two generous cakes of soap. One for the bathroom and one for the kitchen. Yes, sir, Swan is a dream of a soap for every soap and water job in the house. What a dream, huh? And what a soap.
Well, how do you like that? I'm looking for the Sandman, and I wind up with the Bubble Boy.
Oh, Joan, listen. Why don't you try some of Mrs. Hipperton's sleeping pills?
Oh, I don't like to take sleeping pills.
Well, they're absolutely harmless, Miss Davis.
No, thanks, Hippy. I really don't...
try them. They're very mild. Here, I'll pour some of the pills out of the bottle for you.
Oh, she takes the Rip Van Winkle size. Yeah, but you're just wasting them, Hippy. I won't take any.
Well, I'll leave them in case you change your mind. I'll be running along now. Nighty-night. Oh, as Shakespeare said, to sleep, perchance to dream. And how right he was.
As Longshot Louis said, knock down to win, perchance to show. And how wrong he was. Well, Harry, let's start closing up. Where's my brother-in-law, Serena's?
Where he always is, Joan, over in the corner booth, fast asleep.
Gee, everybody can sleep but me. Serena's, Serena's, wake up.
Hello, Johnny.
Oh, Serenas, how can you sleep like that all the time?
Oh, it's easy.
Well, Serenas, listen, after sleeping all day, don't you have trouble sleeping at night?
Oh, no.
Well, what do you use to go to sleep? Pills?
No.
Hot milk?
No.
Well, what do you use?
Pajamas.
Well, never mind that. Serenas, we're closing up now. I want you to go down to the cellar and turn off the furnace.
I'm afraid to go down in the cellar.
Afraid? Why?
I'm afraid of the dark.
Oh, isn't that silly? A man afraid of the dark. Look at me. I'm not afraid of the dark, am I? And I'm not a man, am I?
Well, what question do you want me to answer first?
Oh, forget it. Now go down the cellar and turn off the furnace.
Okay, Johnny.
Well, here's a glass of milk, Miss Davis.
Oh, thanks for the milk, Andy.
It's nice and hot. Drink it.
Listen, Joan, why don't you put one of Mrs. Hipperton's sleeping pills in your milk? It may help you.
Oh, no, I don't want to. I'll drink it this way. Ooh, it's too hot. I burned my nose. I better set it down on the table. The milk, I mean. And let it cool a bit. The nose, I mean. Well, let's start closing up. The tea room, I mean. Harry, you pull down the front shade.
Yeah, okay, Joni.
Come on, Andy. We'll go in the kitchen and bolt the door.
Okay. And then what?
And then we'll turn out the light.
Then what?
Then this lad ought to have a long talk with the boys at the pool room. Come on, Andy.
Okay.
Oh, gee, poor Joni. She's so tired. She really ought to take one of Mrs. Hipperton's sleeping pills because... Hey, I think I'll drop one in her glass of milk right now. There. It'll do her good. She'll never know.
Say, Harry, the bowl on the back door is stuck. See if you can do anything with it.
Yeah, okay, you stay here.
I don't know why Miss Davis doesn't want to take one of Mrs. Hipperton's harmless little sleeping pills. You know, I think I'll drop one in her glass of milk right now. There, it'll do her good. She'll never know. Did you fix the bolt, Harry?
No, I didn't fix the bolt. Joan wants you to help her.
Oh, okay.
Gosh, I hope that sleeping pill worked. Maybe Joan ought to have another one. There.
Well, we finally got the door bolted, Harry.
Uh-huh. What took you so long?
Well, the door didn't bolt as fast as Andy did. Any questions? Well, now I'm going to drink my milk and go home.
That's a good idea.
You know, maybe Mrs. Hipperton was right. I ought to try one of her sleeping pills.
Oh.
I'll put one in my milk.
No, Joan, I don't think you ought to...
Gee, I hope it works.
But, Joan, you don't know that...
Maybe one isn't enough. I ought to put two in, I think.
Oh, gosh, Miss Davis, I've already put...
There. Well, here goes. Gee, this glass is heavy.
How was it, Joan?
Ooh, I feel funny.
Funny?
Yeah. Gee, it's getting warm in here.
Ooh.
The room is beginning to go around.
Ooh.
And the floor keeps swaying from side to side.
Ooh.
Anything else?
Yeah, there's an owl in here that keeps going, ooh.
Gosh, Harry, I think Miss Davis is a little woozy.
Woozy?
Woozy.
Oh, onesie, twosie, I feel woozy. Whee!
Joan.
Onesie, towsie, I feel whee!
Say, look, Andy, I think we better get Joan into the car and I'll drive her home. Come on, help me, will you, Andy? Look, you get into the car, Andy, and I'll drive you home, too.
No, thanks, Harry. I'd rather walk. I'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, come on, Andy. What you want to walk for, hmm? What you want to walk for? What you want to... Huh? Walk? For? What you want to walk for, Annie?
Oh, come on, Miss Davis. Get in the car and let Harry drive you home.
All right, I'll get in on one condition. Just one.
Oh, what's that?
Sling me low, low, boy, so I can go slick, will you?
Well, all right, Miss Davis, and while I'm singing to you, do you want to put your head on my shoulder?
All right, but it won't look any better on you than it does on me.
The weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I bought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Oh, gee, that was swell, Andy. And hey, look, Joan is sleeping like a baby.
Yeah, isn't she cute? Just look at her lying there with her foot in her mouth.
Yeah. Well, I better get going and take her home. I'll see you tomorrow, Andy.
Right.
Boy, those sleeping pills sure knocked Joan out. Gee, she looks pretty when she sleeps. I'm crazy about her, but she's crazy about Andy.
I wish I was Andy Russell. Hey, look out. Look out. Look out!
Who's sick in my bed, huh? Who's sick in it?
Why don't you look where you're going? Look at my car. It's wrecked. Why, I'll sue you for that. Why, Miss Davis.
Hello, Mr. Weatherby. What's new at your bank, huh?
Uh-huh, Miss Davis. Drunk driving.
Who was drunken while I was driving? Who drew drunk, huh?
You are. It's obvious from your speech.
What?
Your speech. Speech, speech.
Okay. Well, I'm a customer, so I am the public speaking. I want to make
Davis,
a
Miss Davis, law-abiding
speech.
Citizen should be protected from drivers like you.
But I wasn't driving. Harry was. Tell him, Harry.
Where am I? Where am I?
Oh, look at the big bump on his head.
He must have hit his head on the windshield.
Are you all right, Harry?
Harry? Who's Harry?
He doesn't know who he is. That blow he received on the head must have caused amnesia.
Go ahead. Tell Mr. Weatherby you were driving, Harry.
I'm not Harry. I'm Andy.
Andy? He thinks he's Andy Russell.
Andy Russell?
That's me. Amor, amor.
Gee, Miss Davis, I'm sorry that we put all those sleeping pills in your milk last night. Otherwise, that automobile accident might never have happened.
Oh, you meant well, Andy. But now our main problem is Harry. He's got amnesia. He thinks he's you.
Well, where is he now?
He's in the kitchen, studying for your college exam.
He is?
Yeah, and if I know him, you're going to flunk.
Gee, we've got to snap him out of it. Oh, Harry! Harry!
Oh, he won't answer to that. I'll get him. Oh, Andy! Andy!
What do you want, Miss Davis? Shall I sing for you?
Now, look, Harry. I mean Andy. Andy, I...
Hello, everybody.
Oh, it's Barbara Weatherby.
Hello, Andy.
Hello, Barbara.
I wasn't talking to you, Mr. Von Zell.
Von Zell? Who's Von Zell?
Why, you are.
No, I'm Andy Russell.
What?
Well, you see, Barbara, Harry got a bad blow on the head in the accident last night, and he thinks he's me.
Amor, amor, amor.
Oh, how terrible.
You ain't kidding.
Look, Harry, you're not Andy Russell. Now listen. Amor, amor, amor. Who am I?
Perry Como.
Oh, let me handle this, Perry.
Oh, Miss Davis. You've done enough damage. This wouldn't have happened if you hadn't been driving a car while drinking.
Now, look, Babs, I wasn't drinking and I wasn't driving. I just took too many sleeping pills.
Miss Davis, please save all your lame excuses for the judge and jury. My pater is suing you for $10,000 on the advice of his barrister.
His what, sister?
His barrister. Don't you know what a barrister is?
Oh, sure. When two banisters get married, they have a little barrister.
Oh. Miss Davis, you may jest now, but before we're through, you'll learn that it doesn't pay to get my pater's dander up.
Gee, Babs, I didn't know your pater had dander up.
Miss Davis.
So that's why he never wears blue serge suits.
Oh. Miss Davis, stop jesting to keep your courage up.
Courage up? Dander up? Oh, the whole market's going up. I gotta buy. Call my broker for me.
Oh, this is too much. Miss Davis, I'll see you in court.
Gosh, Miss Davis, the only one who could testify that you weren't driving the car is Harry, and he's got amnesia.
Well, you have to be my character witness, Andy.
I'll be glad to, Miss Davis.
Not you, Harry.
Harry? Who's Harry?
Hey, Miss Davis, you're really in a spot. If Mr. Weatherby wins this case, you'll owe him
$10,000. $10,000? Why, I'll have to sell my jewels. But what good will that do? I'll still owe him $9,999.50. But if he wants to sue, let him sue. Let him sue. Let him sue. And let him sue. Gee, my case will be called in 10 minutes. Where's my character witness, Andy?
Here I am, Miss Davis.
Oh, not you, Harry. The other Andy. Oh, here he comes, running up the steps. Oh, gosh! He fell down. Andy! Andy! Are you hurt? Speak to me, Andy!
Andy? Who's Andy?
I am.
Pleased to meet you. I'm Harry.
How'd you do?
Oh, fine. Now Andy's got amnesia, too. He thinks he's Harry. This is great. Both of my witnesses have amnesia. That really kills my chances. Gee, if I were up on the roof now, I'd throw myself off.
Elevator going up.
Never mind. I'll walk. I'm young. Oh, hi, you hippie.
Hello, Miss Davis and Mr. Russell and Mr. Von Zell. Hello.
Hello, Rosella.
Why, Mr. Russell.
Yes, Mrs. Hipperton?
What? Davis, what's going on here?
Well, wait, I'll tell you, hippie. Harry got amnesia, and he thinks he's Andy, and Andy's got amnesia, and he thinks he's Harry. Now, when I talk to Andy, Harry answers because he thinks he's Andy, but he's really Harry. And when I talk to Harry, Andy answers because he thinks he's Harry when he's really Andy. Understand, Andy?
Perfectly.
Then explain one thing to me.
What?
Who am I?
Why, you're Miss Davis, of course.
Oh, Rosella. I'll win this case yet. I'll plead insanity.
I'll straighten this out, Miss Davis. Now, look, Harry.
Yes, Rosella.
No, not you. You're not Harry Von Zell.
Oh, sure I am. I'm the man who says Swan's a new white floating soap that's pure as fine.
Suds and mildness both. That's what you get in Swan. What a soap. What a... Hey, where am I?
You're in the county courthouse.
County courthouse?
Yeah, Mr. Weatherby's suing me for that accident we had in your car. He insists I was drunk while driving. He's suing me for $10,000.
Oh, $10,000. Poo-poo.
Yeah, Harry, and if he wins, it's going to cost me $5,000 of poo.
Well, don't you worry. It won't cost you a cent, Joan. Weatherby's dead wrong about this thing. Firstly, you weren't drunk, and secondly, I was driving the car. And thirdly, I can prove that he was driving the wrong way on a one-way street.
You can?
Sure I can. I'm going right over there and straighten this whole thing out with him. See you later, Joan.
There you are, Miss Davis. Now your problem is solved.
Oh, no, it isn't. We've still got to help restore Andy's memory.
Andy? Who's Andy?
Why, you are.
Oh, no, I'm Harry.
Oh, no, you're not. Harry's very fond of me.
Well, I'm Harry, and I'm very fond of you.
Harry loves to take me out.
Well, I'm Harry, and I love to take you out.
Harry always wants to kiss me.
Well, I'm Harry, and I want to kiss you.
It's a shame to take advantage of this boy, but...
Gee, I didn't know you could kiss like that, Miss Davis.
Miss Davis? Who's Miss Davis?
Joni will be back in a moment, folks. Meanwhile, do you know what it means when you take that used kitchen fat you've been saving to your meat dealer? Well, for one thing, it means soap. Yes, sir, literally millions of bars and packages of soap can be made from used kitchen fat. And although red points are a thing of the past, you will continue to get 4 cents in cash for every single pound of used kitchen fat you turn in. You see, used fat contains materials to make soap, and without it, soap shortages cannot be prevented. So the next time you have trouble finding soap, keep in mind, where there's fat, there's soap. Yes, that used kitchen fat will come back to you not only in soap, but in fabrics, nylon, and hundreds of other long-awaited items. So please keep right on saving and turning in every single drop of used kitchen fat. And now here's Joni again. Say, what's happening in Swanville next week, Joni?
Well, Harry, I'm going to try to make some extra money in the tea room so I can afford to buy a new spring outfit. Then maybe Andy Russell will pay attention to me instead of Barbara Weatherby.
Oh, Joan, why don't you stop trying to compete with Barbara? After all, she attracts Andy because of her intelligence. She's a college graduate.
Right, so she's got more education than I have.
And Barbara's wealthy. She has 2 cars.
All right, so she's got more money than I have.
And Barbara's beautiful. She has lovely blonde hair.
All right, so she's got more peroxide than I have. Good night, everybody.
The Joan Davis Show, presented by Swan Soap, is produced and directed by Dick Mack and is written by Jay Summers, Jack Harvey, and Cy Wills. Stay tuned to the station, and in 5 minutes, you will hear the Lux Radio Theater. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Joan Davis Time, on Tuned to Yesterday, from the 11th of March, 1946, on CBS. This is an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and now the Milton Berle program, on the air for 4 years. At this point, part of NBC's Tuesday night lineup at 8, where 11.5 million people were tuned in to hear Uncle Milty in this episode with the salute to New York from January 27th, 1948.
Johnny presents the Milton Berle Show. From Radio City, New York, here is the Milton Berle Show. With Bert Kelton, Jack Albertson, Johnny Gibson, Mary Shipp, Charlie Irving, Billy Sands, Roger DeCoven, our singing star Dick Farney, Ray Block and his orchestra, and yours truly, Frank Keller. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, you're great.
This week, New York City celebrates the 50th anniversary of the joining together of its five boroughs. The star of our show was born in New York, raised in New York, and tonight, as usual, his program will die in New York. And here he is, Milton Berle.
Thank you. I'm dying in New York. You buried me already. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Ah, New York, New York. It used to be the city of skyscrapers. Today, it's the city of snowscrapers. It's no joke. How do you... Got off to nothing there. How do you like the weather we're having? Today, New York has the kind of weather that California says about Florida. Wait a minute, that didn't come out. Nothing but snow and ice. The city is packed with visitors, people from Alaska coming here for winter sports. The Republicans finally found out where the cold came from Eisenhower's shoulder. Ike. Yes, sir. This week, Eisenhower made his statement. He said, I'd rather be Dwight than president. That's his first name, folks. Thank you, Democrats. But this is Eisenhower dropping out gave Dewey a lot of confidence. Yesterday, I saw Dewey down at Macy's ordering an awning for Truman's balcony. Well, look, if we're going to get together, not single, everybody together.
Berle.
That's enough. Take down the sign.
Berle, we're saluting New York, not politics.
Oh, that's right. New York, we're saluting you. Right, Mr. Gallup? And you don't know this, do you? But, I was born in New York. I was. Oh, what a neighborhood. It was a business section. Everybody was in the same business. Murder Incorporated. Boy, what a tough neighborhood. You could always tell a newcomer. He had ears. Oh, boy, what a neighborhood. The kids were all gambling. Even the school was called PS 8 to 5. Some jokes, eh, Mr. Gallup? Some jokes, eh? Wasn't that a great opening routine?
Yes, it's like the snow in the Bronx.
It is?
It just lays there.
No milking of the audience. Leave that to me. Milton Berle. It lays there the snow. That was a jazzy joke. But enough, Mr. Gallup, of my childhood. Mr. Gallup, let's hear how you lived. You did live once, didn't you?
Berle, I was born in Boston.
In Boston? Yes, born in Boston, huh?
Yes, mother was Back Bay and father had it in front.
That's a belly laugh. Mr. Gallup, tell me, did you have a very exciting childhood?
No, I led a very sheltered life.
You did?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I was 35 that I discovered there were certain things does couldn't do.
Oh, that's wonderful. The Gallups of Boston. Your family was pretty ritzy. Ritzy, weren't they?
Oh, yes. Mother used to hold her nose so high, the old girl was always short-circuiting telephone wires.
Nothing. Mr. Gallup. That's nothing. Mr. Gallup, I suppose you went to Harvard?
Harvard?
Did you?
Well, we used to send our butlers to Harvard.
Oh. Well, how were you educated?
traveling with father.
Mm-hmm.
He used to go on trophy hunting expeditions through the African jungles.
Sounds exciting.
Oh, it was. One year he came home with a shrunken head.
A shrunken head?
Yes, he still can't find a hat small enough to fit it.
Well, what a full life you've had, Mr. Gallup. And here you are, a big success on this program.
Burl, any success on this program I owe to one woman.
Your mother?
No, your mother. She's the only one who laughs.
Mr. Gallup, that was cute. That was fascinating. You took the story of a gallop and slowed it down to a walk. You should speed it up to a canter, and I wish you were on his program. And now... No, I'm kidding. Bob, before someone thinks that this is a low for station identification, let us continue as we salute New York City. New York, the world's melting pot. It's called melting pot because we spend so much money clearing the snow that by the time it starts melting, we haven't got a pot. This, then, is New York.
New York was discovered by Dutch explorers in 1609, but they didn't settle until 2 years later.
Couldn't find a parking space.
In 1626, New York was bought from the Indians for $24. The deal was completed when an Indian said,
"Suckers, you could have gotten it at Klein's for $16.95."
But when the Indians realized how they'd been cheated, their chief laid down the following curse.
May this ground never know peace. May continual bickering, fighting, and bloodshed take place on this spot.
He was right. Today that spot is Ebbets Field. But it is in the field of transportation that New York has shown the greatest progress.
In 1825, a horse car made the first trip to Mineola, Long Island in 32 hours.
Today, the Long Island Railroad makes the same trip in 30 hours.
In 1883, the Brooklyn Bridge was completed.
The minute that the Brooklyn Bridge was opened, small businessmen went to work.
Pardon me, friend. Would you care to buy this beautiful new bridge for only a small down payment I can?
But it wasn't until 1898 that the five boroughs of New York were joined together to make up Greater New York, the world's greatest city.
But New York, with all its brilliance and all its power, cannot live down that horrible blow it is given each week when we hear... From New York City, here is the Milton Berle Show.
Mr. Gallup, New York means different things to different people. To the young man, it means nightlife. Remember years ago when you'd sing to that one and only girl. Oh, come and meet those dancing feet. On the avenue, I'm taking you to 42nd Street. Cynthia. Precious memories of Cynthia. It was on 42nd Street in the theater that we met. We just looked at each other and you fell into my arms. Slippery runway, wasn't it? Cynthia, my burlesque queen. Remember that night you did the Oriental cooch cooch? Then the cops came in and threw you in the can-can. That was bad, bad. Should have been out, out. But my favorite, Cynthia, signed the A. Sit still. My favorite was your fan dance. You used to come out and pull off your feathers. It was no use. They kept growing back. Cynthia and your dancing feet. I remember how you used to kick your leg up in the air. Then that cute way you'd catch it on the way down. Kind-hearted Cynthia. You danced in burlesque just to support your mother. You had to support her. She danced next to you and she kept falling down. I like that one. I don't care. Lovely Cynthia. You entered every beauty contest. How proud you were when they named you America's Best. Then you found out they meant America's Beast. But Cynthia, my fondest memory, Cynthia, was the finish of your dance when you did that split. I could never decide which half of you to take home. So until they glue you together, I'll keep singing of that the song I love, the melody of...
40. Gory, naughty, body, 42nd Street.
Thank you. That was the Lull and Lullaby of Broadway played by Ray Block and the Philomars Orchestra. And incidentally, I'd like to mention that Ray Block just returned from a record-breaking tour. He went around with Petrillo breaking records made after December 31st. The cello player just dropped his teeth. I just wanted to... From the program, True or False. But let us continue. Let us continue now as we salute to New York as we present...
New York Forum Tonight. New York Forum Tonight. The question, should the New York subway be investigated as an underground movement?
Thank you, Mr. Gallup. Let's commence now with questions from our audience. All right, let's start with this gentleman in the first row, licking stamps with a calf's tongue. Yes, sir?
Mr. Burrow, my home is Florida, but there are two things keeping me here in New York. And one of them is your program.
Oh, that's good. What's the other thing?
My keeper at Bellevue.
Thank you. Thank you, Henry Morgan. Now, let us continue. All right, this young man with the pigeon on his head and the nervous look. Young man, what is your name?
My name is Plaza 81599.
Plaza 81599, that's your name?
Yeah, my father named me after his bookie.
I see.
I come from a gambling family.
Yeah?
I got a twin brother named Bingo.
Bingo?
Yeah, when I was born first, and then Bingo.
Let's take it again, son, please. And Bingo, your family has gambling names?
All but my mother.
What do you call her?
Nick the Greek.
All right, Plaza 8. You have a question about New York?
Why, is there something wrong with being from New York?
No, but
then
I...
what are you standing there like a schnook asking questions?
I just thought...
What are you, wives got in Jersey stirring up trouble?
No, I'm not...
If you don't like it in New York, then blow. Who needs you?
I didn't...
Where else do you find such friendly cab drivers and such good holler bar? In little old New York.
But that's...
Where else can you phone Jack Iger for a nickel and wish you didn't? In little old New York.
Please.
Your mother's snowplow.
Not lose our tempers. Let's hear now from the women in our audience. All right, this lady in the aisle with a can of Sterno cooking her husband's goose. What is your name, madam?
Paola Feeney. I'm a homemaker.
I see. And you have a question that concerns New York City.
Yeah. Why won't my husband Brentwood ever leave Delancey Street? He's been on that street so long, he looks like a pushcart.
Like a pushcart?
Yeah, when he gets loaded, they roll him in the gutter.
Your husband loves New York?
He's nuts about the air in New York.
The New York air?
Yeah, fresh air makes him gag.
No kidding.
Last year, he went to Atlantic City, took one whiff of that good air, and fainted.
He fainted?
They had a wave of salami in his face to bring him to.
Tell me, what else does your husband like about New York?
He loves to ride in the subway. For 30 years, he's been hanging on those straps.
Has it had any effect on him?
Only when he walks, one hand dragged on the ground.
What a long arm.
It's kind of handy. When I'm in the bathtub, he washes my back. It's amazing.
What's amazing about him washing your back?
In the living room.
Oh, I see.
He's chairman of the League of Indignant Citizens Against Tearing Down the Fayette Avenue Well.
They're mad?
Mad. They say if the Fayette Avenue Well comes down, they're going to raise a little L of their own.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Feeney. Thank you. And now for the climax of our forum tonight, it is an honor to present one of New York City's finest. He is none other than that famous New York policeman, tough as nails, strong as an ox, whose burly shoulders and mighty arms maintain order. I want you to meet Patrolman Casey Featherfield. Ladies and gentlemen, Officer Featherfield.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. I've right here this moment as one of the most glorious adventures of my life to speak a few kind words to the many men I've arrested in Times Square and the women I pinched in the subway.
Tell us, officer.
Excuse me, Mr. Burrell. Do you mind if I sit down? I'm pooped.
You're tired?
On the way over here, I picked a grape off a fruit stand. I think I strained myself.
But, Officer Featherfield, a grape isn't heavy.
This one had seeds in it.
Oh, that's different. Now, how did you ever become a policeman?
It was natural. I was born with flat feet.
Flat?
Yeah. My mother was frightened by the top of my father's head.
Your father's head was flat?
We always had to tilt him to get the dandruff off.
Officer Featherfield, have you had many fights with criminals resisting arrest?
Just one. She was big, too.
She? A girl?
She punched me in the nose. When I saw my blood, I was so shocked I fainted.
You were shocked at your own blood?
Yeah. I didn't know I had any.
Well, you'll excuse me for saying this, officer, but you don't seem to be very brave.
How about that?
Yeah. I imagine criminals aren't very afraid of you.
No. They shrink back in terror when they see me standing there with my old persuader at my side.
Your old persuader? That's your gun?
No, that's my wife.
Wait a minute. Your wife is a policewoman?
Yes. That's why I'm going to retire.
Retire?
Yes. My wife is 6 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and weighs 340 pounds.
Yes?
Mr. Burrell, that's enough bull for one family.
Thank you very much, Mr. Featherfield. Thank you. Here's our young singing star, Dick Marnie, to sing.
I'll dance at your wedding.
Sing it, Dick.
I'll dance at your wedding. I'll dance at your wedding. I'll have a wonderful time. I'll drink to your father. I'll drink to your mother. When I'll have another for old lang syne. I'll kiss all the ladies, the young and old and then. I'll have myself another drink and kiss them all again. I'll dance at your wedding. I won't miss that wedding. I'll dance at your wedding. Am I gonna shine at your wedding? Am I? I kiss all the ladies, they're young and old and then. And kiss them all again. I'll dance at your wedding. I won't miss that wedding. I'll dance at your wedding. Am I gonna shine at your wedding and mine?
Wonderful. Wonderful, Dick Farney. Really swell. Now, there's a grand combination. Dick Farney singing with Ray Block's orchestra behind him. The trouble is that they're always four. Yeah, don't go away. I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. You know, I was about to say, there are always four bars behind him, and I got mixed up.
Like
usually, you get caught up in your mouth, and you know what to say. So that's the reason I was being... Did you say something, Mr. Gallup?
No, did you?
Must be people upstairs again. I'll have to speak to Mr. Rockefeller when he comes around for the rent. Yeah, we're all proud of our city of New York, ladies and gentlemen, but being proud isn't enough. We have duties as citizens, such as jury duty and cooperating as witnesses. Let me tell you what happened the time that I was a witness. It was one night last summer. My wife and I were sitting out on the porch. It was a beautiful, romantic night. Darling. Darling, what a night. Look at the stars. You could reach out and pick them in that moon. It's like a silvery beacon showing love is the way to happiness.
Oh, stop slobbering and come into the house.
Gee, darling, I feel just like I did the night I proposed to you 6 years ago. I feel so romantic tonight.
Well, that'll make it twice in 6 years.
Okay. Gee, it's after midnight. Look at those two cars weaving down the street.
Well, they're going to crash.
Look out! They did. Oh, the drivers are getting out. I better go over.
Hey, you run right into me. Why don't you look where you're going? You cut right in front of me. That's your fault.
Oh, it is not.
Pardon me, gentlemen, for interrupting. Is there anything I can do?
Ah, a witness. Yeah, I want you to testify that this drunken bum is drunk.
Oh, I am not.
Well, wait a minute, gentlemen. Here's my card. The name is Burl.
Oh, that's wonderful. We'll put this reckless bum in jail. He's a menace to society.
Oh, I am not.
Well, Mr. Gallup, that was last July. After 22 postponements, the case finally came up last week.
Next case, McGonagall versus Benson. Counsel for McGonagall.
Your Honor, I will show that my client, McGonagall, sustained damages by the inebriated, intoxicated, alcoholic driving of Benson.
And besides that, he was drunk.
Oh, I was not.
He was, too.
Go ahead, Mac, we're at the bar.
Good. Two beers.
Wait a minute, what did I call into this time? Well, it's my duty.
Counsel for Benson.
Your Honor, my client throws himself at the mercy of the court and will abide by your decision.
Oh, I will not.
Oh, brother.
Proceed. I call upon our only witness, a public-spirited citizen who wants to see justice done, Milton Berle. Milton Berle to the bar.
Coming, Your Honor. I feel it's my duty.
Shut up.
Yes.
Raise your right hand.
I.
You swear to tell truth, whole, and nothing but?
I.
Sit down.
Yes.
Look, I just want to.
Burl, will you tell us in your own words just what happened on the night of the accident?
Well, gladly. It was a beautiful night, and I was sitting.
I'm Jack. Drunk it all. Bombs away.
Proceed, Burl. Burl, come out from under that chair.
Well, what happened?
Shut up. Proceed. Mr. Burl, what, in your intelligent opinion, caused the accident?
Your client was drunk.
Drunk?
And he's still drunk.
That's a dirty lie. The other guy was drunk.
Oh, I was not.
Gentlemen.
Where's those beers I ordered?
Proceed with your story, Burl.
Yes, sir. It was a beautiful night, and I was...
I object! Point of order!
Where's my beer?
Here with Carl.
Do not drown,
follow that man!
Oh, sister, what is this?
Shut up! Proceed. Well, you say my client was drunk, eh? What time did this accident, which you claim you saw, take place?
Oh, it was after midnight.
Uh-huh! What were you doing up at an hour when all decent, respectable people are asleep? Explain that.
Well, it was a beautiful evening.
I object. Pass the salt.
Where's my beer?
Check your arm.
Close that bar.
Fire!
Proceed. And where were you, Burl? Obviously an alias. Where were you when the accident took place?
Me, I was sitting on my porch.
Uh-huh. Thousands of honest citizens having a roof over their heads. You have a porch.
You have a porch. You have a porch.
Yes, I have a porch. What's good enough for President Truman is good enough for me. Look, now, the people in the court agree with me, too. Look, I'm just a witness. What about the accident?
The accident you caused?
I?
If you had cleaned the snow from in front of your house, the cars wouldn't have skidded.
No. Your Honor, I demand that statement be eliminated. Snow in the street. The accident took place in July.
Where do you live?
In Queens.
The statement stands.
But, Your Honor...
What? Proceed. Burl, we have evidence to show that with you on your porch was a blonde. Explain that.
Well, you see, it was a beautiful...
I object!
Turn the post!
Where's my beer?
I can't deal!
Turn the court!
And not for two.
Burl!
I'm sorry, Judge. I guess I was... carried away.
It does get exciting, doesn't
it? Yes, it does.
Pussy! And what, Pearl, was a blonde doing on your porch?
I warn you, the white slave laws are strict in this state.
White slave? The blonde's my wife.
Your wife? A man on the porch with his own wife after midnight? This is the most revolting case in my 30 years on the bench. I was just sitting with my wife.
Your wife?
Only a pinheaded jackass would believe a story like that. Oh, I would not.
Now, you stay out of this. You're the cause of the whole thing.
Oh, I am not.
Now, look, Judge, I can explain.
And explain why you and your wife were up at that hour.
We're always up late. We wait until the neighbors go to sleep, and it's nice and quiet.
And it's also nice and easy to sneak into their home.
Oh, it's not so easy. Sometimes their windows are stuck.
Wait a minute.
Your Honor, I'm just a witness.
We know what you are. Your Honor, we have here the man responsible for the wave of robberies now sweeping Queens.
You have who?
You!
No!
Your Honor, I turn over to you Milton Burroughs, alias Fingers Fink.
No, it's Milton Fink. I mean, everybody knows me. Fingers Burroughs.
Fingers Fink, who with his blonde accomplice, Bessie the Barracuda, have burglarized their last home.
My wife, a Barracuda. She can't even swim. Your Honor, I just came out. I'm just a poor white slaver. I mean,
quiet! Step to the bar.
Yes, sir.
Fingers?
Again with the fingers. I'm just a witness.
Yes, a man low enough to lie and cheat just to get the $2.40 witness fee.
$2? I don't want the money. I don't want anything.
Sorry, Burl, but you're getting something.
I am what?
30 days and you'll like it.
Oh, I will not.
Thank you very much. I'll be back in just a moment. In the meantime,
remember this.
This is Johnny again, returning now to the thousands of store windows and counters all over America. Look for me. I'll be waiting for you. Come in and...
The Milton Berle Show was written by Matt Heitman and Aaron Rubin. This is Frank Gallup saying goodnight for Philip Morris.
And this is Milton Berle. Good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Milton Berle Show, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 27th of January, 1948, on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.